Hello and welcome to the Digital Lighthouse. I'm Zoe Cunningham. On the Digital Lighthouse, we get inspiration from tech leaders to help us to shine a light through turbulent times. We believe that if you have a lighthouse, you can harness the power of the storm. Today, I'm excited to welcome Denham Hess, who is Chief Data Officer at BDO. So, hello, Denham.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me, Zoe.
Welcome to the Digital Lighthouse. Tell me briefly about your background and your role at the moment, like what you're responsible for.
So yeah, I'm Denham. I'm the Chief Data Officer at BDO, as you said. I started my career in data around 10 years ago. I started working at Deloitte. I was in a kind of consulting capacity, and I was part of Deloitte Digital actually in its very early stages, which was a lot of fun. I started as an analyst building Tableau dashboards. It was kind of the period when putting a map on a dashboard was really exciting for people, but very kind of like tactical BI. And I was doing it pretty badly, to be honest with you. And then I started to sort of transition into managing data projects and data deliveries. And I really enjoyed that. It taught me a lot about how to manage people in technical roles, how to explain technical concepts to senior stakeholders, and, you know, how to work with clients. But it also taught me how to get things done, how to get deliveries over the line. And I think that's a skill that's very important. I moved from Deloitte then to Prudential. I was actually a consultant at Prudential with Deloitte, so it was a seamless transition for me. But I moved in as the head of data, and the job at the start was essentially to stand up a new data and analytics team. So completely greenfield, built a new team from the ground up to about 10 initially. And over the 4.5 years that I was there, it just grew. Prudential merged with M&G on the FTSE 100. And by the time I finished up, I was director of data there. Had a team of 75 across data engineering, analytics, digital analytics. And we delivered analytics globally, basically, for the client-facing and distribution parts of the business. And then just over a year ago, so Jan 2023, I started my new role, Chief Data Officer at BDO. BDO, for context, is a, you know, we're on track to be a £1 billion business. We've got 8,500 people working for us in the UK. And we provide audit, tax, and advisory services to the market. We're leaders in the mid-market. That's kind of 10 to 75 million pound revenue firms. And I guess what really drew me to the role was, one, BDO's got a really impressive track record of growth, even through difficult conditions and difficult markets. They invest really heavily in people. They know that people is kind of the core of the business. But also the role itself was what I consider to be kind of a true CDO role. It has the kind of full mandate, which is very important to me. So I look after data management and data governance. I look after data analytics and engineering. I look after data culture for the firm. And I think before we get into the topic of the podcast, I think the thing that I'm enjoying the most is the kind of shift from the head of and director role to the CDO role, which is for me shifting from running a technical team or technical delivery team or teams to being responsible for data as a whole and its use and its misuse, I suppose, across the firm, inside or outside of your direct teams. So are we making the most out of our data as a firm, regardless of whether it's my direct reports doing that? My role is now data right across BDO. So I think that's what puts a C into the CDO title. It makes it a very big task, but enjoying it so far.
A very big task and very broad. So I think it really sets the scene to look at your background and where you've come from and all the different facets that make up this role that you're now doing. But I quite like to ask about the core, at the core of it, right, is what data BDO has and then how you utilize that as an asset. So, you know, what are the kind of tangible outcomes of treating the data that BDO has as an asset?
Yeah. So it's a good question. I think, so for me, when we think about data as an asset, you know, we think about lots of firms, we'll say, well, data is really important to us. And I think that's great. It's a good starting point. But treating data as an asset for me is about treating it in the same way that you would other assets that are maybe more readily recognized as assets. So maybe property or real estate is a good example.
Right. Like physical assets. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. More tangible assets are the easier ones to recognize. So when we think about data as an asset, we think about it in the sense that it holds realized value, probable value, and potential economic value, I'm talking about here, to the firm, and that it's identifiable and it's separable from other assets. Yeah. So for example, data assets are distinct and separable from our technology assets. I can tell you what they are, I can identify them, and I believe that regardless of the technology that they're stored in, they hold some probable or potential economic value to the firm. So we think about it in a real, like, you know, I'm working at accountants now, we're thinking about it kind of, how do we define an asset? So that's how we think about it. So it's more than language, I suppose, in terms of data is important to us, we want to be data driven, that kind of stuff that you'll typically see in vision statements. And I think what that then says when you start to think about it and get it recognized as a genuine asset is you say, well, okay, that means we should manage it and we should expect a return on it. You know, we should recognize that probable and potential economic value. And so you say, well, how much money and effort and time should we spend on that? And then you start to get into the question of, well, how much is the asset worth? So what is that potential value? What is that probable value? And I think that's a really nice kind of shift in mentality for the business to start thinking about data in a different way.
Well, also, money is the way that we can compare resources across different parts of the business, right? What do we invest in consultancy versus invest in data? Well, actually, it's totally different parts of the business, and money helps you turn it into a single dimension that you can compare on. And I think this is a great way of looking at it to say, what return can we expect? That both sets the expectations, because I think it's too easy to say we value data, but actually you leave it sitting around and you don't make the best use of it because it's not on anyone's priority. But actually, if you say this asset should be generating this revenue, it kind of drives you to make the most of it, right?
Yeah, it's useful for, you know, lots of different groups of stakeholders. For analytics teams, you can look at it and go, well, which are the highest value data assets? And really, that's a good starting point. So what, maybe that's the place to explore what data products we can build with it. And that might be reporting an MI, which is kind of the really traditional use of data, but it might be new revenue streams. Like, is there an option to monetize that data out to the market, for example, because it's that valuable? So it can kind of change your perspective and maybe make the data team feel a little bit less inward and think about the value that it creates for the business. It helps you when you go and have conversations with people within the business, within their roles, who are collecting data and putting it into the system, because they start to realize its value to the firm. And one of the big challenges for data governance teams is, you know, you go to assign a data owner, or we call them data trustees, but data owner is what it's more typically known as. And you find somebody who's relatively senior in the firm and you say, you're now accountable for the quality of this data and how it's defined and its use and all that kind of stuff. And they're really busy people who haven't worked in data teams specifically, so maybe don't feel comfortable with all the language that's being used around it. And now they've suddenly got all these new responsibilities and they've got to try and galvanize a load of business areas to get behind them on something. When you start to talk about them, you're owning, I'll make it up, but £1 million asset here, it changes the conversation again, and it helps them, you know, even in their own kind of personal career development, when they're doing their performance reviews and things, they can say, well, I'm responsible for this £1 million asset, in the same way that someone who looks after property and real estate will say, oh, I'm responsible for this size asset. You can do the same for data. So yeah, it's a good sort of shift, I think, in perspective, but it also helps you kind of get practical in terms of how you sort of allocate your effort to managing data across the firm.
Yeah, and it's obviously going to change on a tactical basis, you know, exactly how people are treating it day to day. Does it also change it at a strategic level in terms of decision making?
Yeah, for sure, because I think there's kind of two parts to it for me when I think about strategic decision making. One is, you actually have clarity and you have trust around data to bring it into that strategic decision-making kind of sessions and meetings and whatever that might be. So you've got more confidence in having data as part of that process. Secondly, you know, what are the businesses that win and do the best? They make decisions better than every other firm, all their other competitors. And so data, actually, by managing it properly and, you know, making sure that it's democratized, it's accessible, and it's well managed and maintained, means you can use data to make decisions more frequently. So it's one, it's about, yeah, I can trust it. And the other one is about, I've got it there for me. And it means, rather than it being a yearly cycle, I can look at this across the year and we can be genuinely agile to what's happening in the market, or, you know, the stuff that our customers are sharing back with us. So I think those two ways are probably the two things I would link it to the strategic piece.
Yeah, that's super interesting because my background is in technology rather than in data. And so it seems like there's a really clear parallel to me with this idea of once you can release your technology frequently, it changes how you can use that and what you can expect from that whole function. And obviously, doing a piece of data analysis once a year, because it's such a big job and you have to collate all the data and clean all the data, and you're going to make different types of decisions than if you press a button and you can see the current state of the data.
Exactly. And linking it to technology, I mean, when we work with product owners and people who are involved in developing new features for products, you know, what are the things really that help decide what that new feature should be? Well, it's the data that comes from the customer's interaction with it, or, you know, the feedback that comes from a workshop. All that stuff is data, and it drives, again, it's just more frequent decision making. So that might go up to a strategic level. Yes, we need to release this product, or we need to release this new service or business line or something. But yeah, importantly, it kind of rolls down to the rest of the firm who make decisions every day, big or small. How do you make data part of that as easy as possible? And when you've got data that maybe you don't trust, that's not of the right quality, that you don't have controls and processes around, it becomes really hard to automate that. And you end up either locking it away, which means you're not getting the value out of it. You know, you've got an asset that's worth X amount that is tucked away that you've got to go and ask permission to use, or you've got a nice solution basically that opens that up in a trusted and governed way, but basically puts data as an asset in the hands of people across your business to make decisions, because that's their job.
Yeah, fantastic. And thinking about this kind of mechanisms for exploiting data or viewing data, tell me a bit about BDO's data marketplace.
So the marketplace is really central to our strategy. For context, you know, we've got 8,500 people, as I mentioned earlier, in the UK. And we know, as we've just discussed, that data is an asset for them. And I believe, and I think a lot of the firm believe, that actually it helps them fulfill their roles and responsibilities more effectively. It might be about efficiency, it might be higher quality. And actually, many of our people across the firm, you know, they're client facing, or they go out to audited entities, and they've got analytics technologies or data visualization technologies. They've got access to that already. The bit that's harder for them is, how do I get access to data that I know I can trust? Where is it? What does it mean? Is it of the right quality? So what we really wanted to do through the marketplace is, how do we democratize data? How do we put it in the hands of people across the firm, but do it in a trusted and governed way? How that works, it's a one-stop shop. Here you go onto an internal portal and you can search. That's where you'd first start. You would search for data. So it might be for us, private equity clients or something like that, right? And it will bring up all of the relevant data products. So immediately you're solving that problem of, you know, I don't have to know who might have access to that or in which system it might be. I'm searching a business term for a business challenge or a business opportunity that I've got that I need for my role. And it's bringing me back the relevant products as if I'm searching on Amazon or something. I can then request access. So it's controlled, it's monitored. There might be some data products that we say, yeah, everybody should have. There might be some that we say actually only certain parts and certain teams should have access to that. And again, we've now got control around that because you can request access. You can understand the data. So you see the products and you can say, well, here it is. I can see maybe what it was used for before. I can see where it was collected, in which system, the kind of lineage stuff. I can see what it was collected for, i.e. what I can and can't use it for when you think about GDPR. And so you go into it with eyes wide open in terms of, what does that data actually mean? You can't misconstrue stuff. You can see whether it's fit for purpose. If I'm going in and I'm trying to build a regulatory report, I need that data to be 100% right. If I'm doing some analysis, you know, I'm taking through some concepts, it's early stage, I might be able to accept less than that because I've got the right context and caveats and it's part of the decision-making process. Again, you go into that eyes wide open rather than finding out at the end that actually it's 95% accurate or something else and that's not fit for purpose for you. And then the last bit is that actually you just use the data there in the marketplace. So rather than having to download a CSV file or something and put it into an SFTP or a SharePoint folder or finding a way to send it to somebody who wants to do something in Power BI, you do it there. The data stays in our enterprise data analytics platform. And that ticks off a big security concern. You know where the data is, you're not moving it around. And, you know, it kind of lines up to one of our principles, which is that we fix data at source. one person tells us that something's not right, we fix that in the source system and it flows through to everybody else who wants to use that same data through the marketplace. So I sometimes talk about it as governance by stealth, because governance has got a terrible branding issue. But yeah, that's the marketplace.
Well, it's kind of seamless governance, isn't it? Rather than some big cumbersome process. And I think for me, that really eliminates this idea of like using the data at source. I think one of my biggest concerns, if I'm ever dealing with like a large body of data, is introducing inconsistencies or introducing errors somehow in how I'm transmitting it, like missing off the second half of an Excel file, or, you know, all of those kind of things. So I can see that that's really reinforcing like trust in the data. So could you tell us a bit more maybe about how effective data governance, whether in this way or in other ways, builds the trust between data providers and consumers, and what are the kind of key elements of that?
Yeah, so when I think about effective data governance, I think about, is data quality improving? Is our understanding of our data improving? Is our use of our data increasing? That's kind of what I think. It's about making it practical. It's about exploiting and extracting that value from this asset. So that's how I kind of think about it. It becomes more trustworthy because the quality is improving, becomes easier to use because I can understand what it actually means. And therefore, we use it as part of more business process, more parts of our business model, and it drives efficiency or quality. So,
and more returns.
And more returns, let's be honest. Yeah, exactly. So, and I kind of talked about data governance maybe having a bit of a branding issue before, but I think, you know, the word that I use most frequently with my data governance team is practical. How do we make this practical? And it's why I really like the marketplace. It's practical. You go there, you search, you find stuff, it solves the data consumer's issues and pain points. If I've got to go and find it, and I don't know whether I can trust it, and I don't really know what it means, take that away and you solve their issue, and you also introduce all the nice stuff around control and compliance with security policies, etc. So I think the practical bit is maybe the first one. The second bit, and I don't know who said it, but there's a piece that says basically if you want to do data governance badly, you do data governance across all your data. You can't govern absolutely everything. And again, this kind of valuation piece with data tells you what your highest value data assets are. So you start there. And I think, again, making it practical for me is about work with the business, partner with them, the users of the data, those consumers of the data, and solve what matters to them. I need to produce this report so I can make these decisions. This is an operational process that falls over because of poor data quality. Solve that for them in the most MVP way possible. Try it, learn and iterate. And over time, you'll build up your mass of policies and standards and processes that kind of complete your data governance framework. So I think it's almost taking that practical kind of business-led approach and applying your data governance knowledge to it. So I think those are the big two. And then the third one, I think, is, as with everything with trust, it's transparency. You know, they really need transparency, because if they're going to build a rapport, they're going to build something, they're going to use data in some way. If you're transparent with them with the issues that you know, the stuff that maybe you don't know, then they can make a decision, because ultimately the consumer has to make a decision on whether it's fit for purpose or not. They might say, okay, that means I can't use it, but they do that knowingly and they do that upfront without wasting effort on it. If you wait for them to find out at the end because you want it to be part of a use case, you break that trust, and it might destroy the trust of more than that data set itself. It might destroy the trust of the whole platform, the whole marketplace. So being transparent and being like, the data quality on this isn't great. Don't use it for a regulatory report. You can use it for some analysis, but beware up front. You can decide whether it's fit for purpose for your use case versus this one we trust. This is our authoritative view of client, and we stand by that. We can trust that and go for it. Use it for anything that you need to.
Yeah, so important. And looking more broadly, what would you say are the emerging trends in data usage and governance? And which of those do you think are going to have the biggest, most significant impact on the industry?
Well, Gen AI is the obvious one, isn't it? So I won't go too much into it, but it's huge and I think it's very exciting. I think the bits that maybe hang off of that are the bits that I'm quite interested in. I'm doing a lot of thinking around, because I think Gen AI, you know, it's captured lots of people's imaginations. It's very practical. There's less barriers to using it. Type some stuff into a seemingly a chatbot and it'll feed some stuff back to you. So execs to grads are getting really hands-on with AI. the stuff that I'm starting to think about around it is, well, how do you make Gen AI create a competitive advantage for you? So if everybody starts to use OpenAI or Bard or some of the really big LLMs that are very common, well, then it's less of a competitive advantage because it's the same data that's in that LLM. And maybe it comes down to how you integrate it with your business model. But equally, I think it can be about how you build your own data solutions alongside that and how you maybe build some smaller language models or something to augment what the big LLMs are doing. So I think there's something around how you make Gen AI be a competitive advantage over the longer term. There's enthusiasm I think will seek out into kind of wider AI applications, like Gen AI is not the only AI piece. AI has been around for a long time. And I think kind of one of my hopes is maybe that it encourages more kind of execs who maybe to have a bit more confidence in taking a bit of a punt and a bit of a risk and putting money into AI and machine learning and advanced analytics capabilities because they can see really practically its potential through generative AI. And then the third one for me is about it's going to turn its focus to data governance. It has to. The foundations remain the same for me. If you are going to be building your own small language models, you're going to be building using other applications of AI, you need good quality data. You know, if you're talking about graph databases, you're talking about neural networks, you really, really need to understand what does your data actually mean and how do you connect it up in a way that you can trust a machine to go and learn from it. And I think that becomes really important. And we're going to see regulation obviously emerging in this space. It's starting to happen. So I think getting good data governance done now means that you're in a nice place to exploit AI more broadly in the future.
Yeah, exactly. And kind of coming back on the conversation we were just having about transparency and repeatability, it's how are you going to be able to trust it unless you have that in place, right? It's kind of not really optional. All right, just finally, quickly, are there any upcoming projects or initiatives at BDO that you're particularly excited about in terms of data management?
The one that I'm excited about is the one that I mentioned at the beginning. You know, we're partway through it, is the data valuation piece. I'm really excited to see how data valuation resonates with other people across BDO. You know, we've got a lot of accountants in BDO to challenge the valuation, so that'll be fun. But I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about how it maybe changes the perception on how we manage data across the firm through its life cycle. And from a data perspective, I'm excited for how maybe it shifts the data office's thinking, because so we're going to get a valuation of realized value, probable value from our data, but how do we shift that up? I think there's huge potential in data. If you think OpenAI is the example, multi-billion pound business model that's just seemingly come out of nowhere overnight. Clearly it hasn't. But what's the thing in the middle of that? It's not the stuff that's on the balance sheet. It's not the number of employees. It's not the buildings that they've got. It's not necessarily the technology that's part of it. The middle of it is data. And I think if we start to realize that at BDO, leaders in the mid-market, big network of people who are collecting data every single day, interacting with clients, giving leading expertise in an information economy, I think can be super exciting. So yeah, I'm excited about data valuation.
I'm now excited about data valuation as well. Thank you so much, Denham, for joining us to share your insights and also to help us shine a light for others.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.